Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio. Happy Star Wars days, everybody. May the 4th be with you. I've been looking forward to saying that all day because I'm a little bit of a nerd. Thank you very much. I am your host, Michael McCurdy, the creator and author of the upcoming encyclopedia WCCW. And joining me, as always, nestled safely behind the Death Star walls, in an undisclosed location, somewhere behind the Redwood Curtain. And I'll tell you this right now, folks, if you're a Star Wars nerd, the Ewok planet is nearby where Joe's at. I'll tell you that right now. I'm giving you a little clue where you might find him. My co-host, I like to call him Obi-Wan Kenobi sometimes, Joe Souza. Joe, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's Star Wars Day. Everybody's happy, a little bit of Luke Skywalker, a little bit of Leia, a little bit of Darth Vader, a little bit of Yoda. Everybody's having a wonderful day.
A little bit of Ben Kenobi. That I like that. That's kind of a little switch from the Miyagi Danielson thing. We'll talk about that later, but
this we're gonna call you Yoda.
Right. Well, before we get this thing going, because we have a boatload of stuff to do and we have some fun stuff as well. Trivia-wise. Just want a little rant. Nothing bad. Just, you know, basically the old person. Jim Ross has always said that his heroes growing up were John Wayne and Mickey Mantle. And those are really big heroes to look up to. And for those of you that, you know, are friends of mine or follow me on Facebook, you saw what I wrote last night. And I wasn't planning on staying up for quite a few hours, but after I posted this picture and wrote a little, it wasn't really little, it was kind of big, a boatload of people came on and we talked. And what I'm making reference to is yesterday, 20 years ago, my first hero, being, you know, a fan, well, not now, well, still a fan, Ray Stevens, you know, most people know him as Ray the Crippler Stevens, passed away yesterday, 20 years ago. And that one really hurt. You know, he was my first favorite wrestler. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, Patterson, Lonnie Mane, Dutch Savage, as I got older, but as a wee lad, the first wrestler I laid eyes on was Ray. And he was it. And this was when he was in San Francisco. And this really hit home, you know, growing up, you know, watching him and knowing his journeys, you know, going into the AWA and into New York and all points in between. But he always came back to San Francisco, and he could be the most hated villain in New York or in Boston or in Texas or wherever. But whenever he came back to San Francisco, he was gold. And I had the honor. So, I mean, I've seen him wrestle in person many a time. And also, I had the honor to talk to him 3 weeks before he passed away. Now, at that time, he was looking for footage of himself from San Francisco. He had footage of himself from New York, everywhere else, until our dear friend, no longer with us as well, Kingji Shibuya, gave him my number. And then he calls me back and he goes, "Joe, I gave Ray your number. I was wondering if that'd be okay." And I go, "Reb Stevens?" And he goes, "Well, yeah." And I almost wanted to say, King G, I just hit the big O, hand me a cigarette, I'm good. And, well, I never said that, but I was thinking that. But anyway, you know, Ray calls me. And we talked for like dang near an hour. And it was just breathtaking. Yes, Michael, I said breathtaking. You know, he was picking my brain that, you know, what I was trying to do in the business and the Dorothy footage. And I'm trying to be cool, but, you know, in my wrestling head, I'm going, oh, my God, I'm talking to Ray Stevens. How cool is this? Doesn't get any better. And so I told him I would edit out all his stuff out of the Dorothy collection. And then, hey, kid, how much are you charging for this? And I go, charging for what? He goes, what you doing for me? And I go, oh, the Joe Sousa special. I'll charge you an 8x10 autograph. And he goes, and? And I go, oh, if you could personalize it to me, that'd be kind of cool. And, you know, we laughed about that. And you know, we wished each other well. And the last thing he asked me was, the last thing I heard him say was, hey, kid, do me a favor. Don't give anybody my phone number because I don't want to deal with that bunch of bull. Well, I'm not going to go into that because we are a family show. But I said, okay, no problem. You know, all, you know, great talking to you. And I like to keep in contact if that's okay. And he goes, yeah, that's fine. And so I thought, crap, talk about a brand spanking new friendship developing. And so I get busy and I put together the tape. And as I was proof watching it, I got the word that Ray passed. And I was by myself and I teared up and cried. And it was, that one really, really hurt. And so I was thinking, okay, I got this tape. What am I going to do for a split second? But then the solution just popped in my head. We were planning on going down to WCW Super Brawl at the Cow Palace. That was the Hogan-Piper match on top. And so on the way there, we stopped in Fremont over where Ray was staying. He was living with his ex-wife, Teresa. You know, even though they divorced and what have you, they became, you know, really good friends. Very close, and their kids hung out there too, and so we went. My wife, Arlene, and one of my brothers, Ramon, and my two kids, Jessica and Kelly. There was no Mike yet. Actually, Mike kind of came along because Arlene was pregnant with Michael. But anyway, we go and, you know, we meet Teresa, and we have brunch at the pool, so lemonade and the kids had snacks, and she proceeded to tell us all sorts of road stories with her and Ray and some ribs. For obvious reasons, most I cannot say on the podcast. We're family-friendly. But it was really, really cool. I gave her the tape. And last night, you know, I was going through my Facebook, and I saw the picture I took of him from 1981. So I put the picture up. And with basically what I'm saying now. And at that time, the boatload of well-wishers and, you know, love. And it turned out to be a 2 or 3 hour love fest for Ray. Fred Lazarus from Derfcast, we talked for a bit. Evan Ginsberg, you all know who he is. We talked a little bit. Just nothing but great stuff of Ray in retrospect. My daughter Patty morphed into daughter Joe. For those of you, check out her comment. It'll knock your socks off. But, I mean, all the stuff that he's done. San Francisco's consummate professional athlete. You rank him up there with Mays and Bonds and Montana and that type of thing. And as I stated last night, for the record, I am still butthurt, if you will, about what WWE didn't do. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he is in other Hall of Fames, legit wrestling Hall of Fames. And as far as I'm concerned, he will always be a Hall of Fame guy in my book. Probably one of the greatest wrestlers ever. The man that's held the United States Championship more times than anybody in the history of big-time wrestling, and also former Worldwide Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion. Okay, Mike, I'm done.
I don't think you were supposed to say anything about heavyweight champion, though, were you?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just...
Yeah, it was... Yeah,
see, Joe
it,
and I
it,
have
it,
these
it,
conversations
it,
ahead of him. We're good.
Let's just say I didn't divulge everything. I just stated the fact that he won the title. And
right now,
that's all you're getting out of me.
Okay. I remember when Ray Stevens died, actually. I will honestly say I do not know much about Ray Stevens other than what I've seen, like AWA, stuff like that. That's my pretty much exposure to Ray Stevens. But I do remember Channel 2 News, KTVU, out of San Francisco. I was watching the news, and they had to come up there. Bay Area wrestling legend Ray Stevens passes away. And I threw a videotape into the VCR, and I hit record. And somewhere, I saved that tape. All my other tapes have been, unfortunately, tossed out due to damage. But I saved that one. So I do actually have the KTVU news footage where they talked to Ray. And I believe they talked to... I cannot think of his name, Joe. I think he was like a German character gimmick.
Gerhard Kaiser?
But they talked to him. That would be the name. He was one of the guys they talked to in the news segment. Thank you.
big-time wrestling assistants. Talk to me. Yeah, Gerhard Kaiser, another good guy. Ray was the one guy that you... He could make you love him or hate him. He could make you laugh. He could make you cry. When I saw him, this was shortly after his big babyface turn. Because before then, he was just, I mean, the people loved to hate him when he was in San Francisco, when he first came on the scene in late 59, early 1960. And his feuds were with Wilbur Snyder, especially Pepper Gomez. He and Pepper set the all-time attendance record for the Cow Palace in 1963, I believe. They drew, I believe, dang near close to 18,000, with several thousand turned away at the door. Now, keep in mind, the Cow Palace for wrestling holds 15,500, somewhere around that time. So when you have 3,000 more people coming in, standing room only, with several thousand, you know, wanting to go through the turnstile. I mean, you knew something was up. But, you know, when he turned good, my first image of Ray was up here at the Municipal Auditorium as a wee lad when I was 6 years old. I vaguely remember him and the late Chief Peter Maivia, Dwayne's grandpa. They took on Pat Patterson. He was under the hood at the time, the mask, but he was still Pat Patterson because he always put the foreign object in his out of his trunks into his mask and headbutt you in the Never Neverland. And Ricky Hunter, which at that time he was known as the Gladiator. And I also remember there was a steel cage surrounding the ring up here in Eureka at the Municipal Auditorium. Ray was just that. He was just that very special guy. Real quick, back in the early 60s, when Ray was feeling free and loosey, and after raising all sorts of havoc in the Cow Palace, he'd go downtown San Francisco, go to the bar, play pool, and there was times where he'd get a little rambunctious, and the cops would kind of, settle down. But I kid you not, you are someone... When after you wrestle in the Cow Palace, you go downtown, raise all sorts of havoc, and San Francisco's finest, they pick you up, they drive you across the Bay Bridge into Oakland, and then drive to Fremont and dump you on your lawn, and then they go back to their jurisdiction. And the next day, Ray would be sober-faced and ready to go, and that was Ray Stevens. I mean... You know, he was a big kid. Nick Bockwinkel said it best, that Ray lived to be Ray Stevens to the very end. But like I said, he was, my first exposure into wrestling. He was my first all-time favorite. Had the honor to talk to him, see him wrestle in person. And I get to listen to him off and on because I have these audio tapes from the early and mid 60s, which, you know, by way of reel to reel, you know about this, Mike. And sometimes I'll put a tape on and just watch, or just put it on YouTube. I mean, it's just the guy was just awesome. And a lot of wrestlers now have pretty much stolen his act. Ric Flair took a lot from Ray. Shawn Michaels did. Ray was also a giver. He would give you the shirt off his back, and also in studio matches, he would make the greenest rookie look like $1 million, you know, on the verge of the ultimate upset. Oh my God, so and so is going to beat Ray Stevens. But of course, you know, Ray wins. But Ray gave a lot, and that's just dang cool, man. That's just way cool.
Anyways, as I said, Joe, yes, when it comes to Bay Area wrestling, San Francisco, the Shire, and some Oregon, you are my go-to guy. Like I said, I know very little about Ray Stevens. I have seen a lot of footage through there. But I can say that, you know, he was a true legend in the sport. And, yes, Joe is still a little butthurt about WWE not inducting Ray into the Hall of Fame. We try not to mention that to him very often, though, because it gets a little emotional. It gets a little angry. He builds a little soapbox. He climbs up on top of it. And he rants a bit, but he's doing good today. He's doing good today. He's remembering somebody that meant something to him. But on other notes here, we're going to move on a little bit. Like you said, Joe, we're going to have a little trivia fun tonight. Our guest tonight is going to be Franklin Lee. Franklin Lee, I guess you could call him a super fan. Huge fan of professional wrestling. And he had what many would say a very life-altering event happen to him. And due to that and through what happened, he has created the Franklin Lee Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And he honors independent wrestlers into this Hall of Fame. And I've had a chance to meet him. CAC, very nice guy, but an amazing story. So I wanted to bring him on because I think guests like this sometimes can kind of be that little, that inspiration that people are looking for. Someone's having a bad day. Someone's thinking, I can't do this. They could hear a story like Franklin's and realize, well, damn, if he can do it, I can do it. You know, if he can survive through that, then I can do this. So that's why we have Franklin on here tonight. Plus, I issued the challenge and both of them took it. So tonight, right here on ISWE Radio, the human history book of ISWE, Brian Westcott, is going to go one-on-one with Franklin Lee in the very first ISWE Radio Professional Wrestling Trivia Challenge. Joe and I have come up with a few select questions. Some good, some bad, some maybe easy, some maybe hard. Some we may not know the answer to. We're kind of faking this a little bit. But we're going to put these two one-on-one and see who's going to walk away the Trivia Challenge winner. Do they get a prize? No. Do they get a crown? No. Do they get a belt? No. A little bit of bragging rights. We'll give them some bragging rights. That's about the best we can do. We're a low budget. It's ISWE Radio.
But, Joe, I'm kind of looking forward to this. Laughing.
A little bit of both, unfortunately. You know, the flu season has descended upon the McCurdy household again, and my wife and I sound like crap for the last, like, week. So we're getting better. If you can imagine, I sounded worse a couple days ago. So I'm actually happy that I was able to partake of this show tonight.
Well, it ain't about the two packs of Super King size earlier today, was it?
No.
Okay.
Also, before I forget, you know, we have mentioned WWE a couple times. I think I can speak for Brian and Joe as well. We would like to send our best wishes out to WWE superstar Enzo Amore. If any of you are watching the Payback pay-per-view on the WWE Network this past Sunday, you witnessed what a lot of people in this business don't want to see. You witnessed an injury to a wrestler in the ring during a match. Luckily, Enzo Amore is going to be all right. He did suffer a concussion, but was released from the hospital before the Payback show actually ended on Sunday night. So what could have been a far worse situation, you know, a concussion is nothing to, you know, take lightly, but what could have been far worse. So our wishes go out to Enzo, and we're hoping to see him back in a WWE ring soon. Because, you know, he is, along with Big Cass, probably one of the hottest tag teams WWE has right now. They came on day after WrestleMania and basically took over like, you know, a storm. They are hugely popular, and a crowd went silent when the injury happened on Sunday. So, as I said, best wishes out to him, and we'll hope to see him in the ring here very soon.
Well, hopefully, you know, when he does come back, it won't be too early. A lot of guys, you know, they want to come back early and, you know, bulletproof. And it's like now that, you know, with most companies, they do have a protocol to where, you know, you have to be at least 100% to be able to get back in the ring. And if you're even 98 or 99%, you're not, you're going to have to wait a little bit. So, I mean, first, you know, safety comes first. So, you know, we wish him well. And, you know, when he comes back, that'll be awesome. But if he's not back, there's got to be a reason. So, you know, he's got to, you know, keep his head on straight. Pardon the pun.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. I don't know if you saw it. Did you watch Payback, Joe? Did you see that on the show?
Yeah, we had a pretty busy day that day. We were at Sequoia Park. Patty, she got out of the house, and she had the kids, and it was Arlie and myself, Jessica and Damien, and so we just had a good time at the park, and then we got home and took care of some business, and at the same time, they were starting up the show a little late, so my brothers go, hey, you want to watch? And I said, sure. So, you know, watched bits and pieces, but I did catch that spot where that happened, and yeah, that was, yeah, all jaws hit the ground in Sousa House, I'll tell you that right now.
I think all jaws hit everywhere. I mean, it came to a complete and utter halt. You had the New Day out in the corner sitting out there. I think they were eating pizza because, you know, that's what the New Day does. They like to come out and have a little fun. But as soon as they realized the severity of it, it just tense. You know, they cut away from Enzo at the time. They went straight to the commentators. That right there made me nervous. Because the last time I remember doing something like that was, well, Jerry Lawler had a heart attack. So that was one of the last times they ever cut away and didn't show something going on. So, you know, it did kind of make me a little bit nervous. But like I said, very glad to hear that he was responding
well,
and was released from the hospital. So, but it happened so quick.
Right. I mean, for obvious reasons, you know, they're not going to go, they're not going to keep it right there. But, I mean, even though they did show a couple of replays, you know, but, you know, which it was kind of a little confusing because, you know, they panned away. They went straight back to the announce table. But later on, they went ahead and showed it a couple of times, one in slow motion. And I'm kind of thinking, okay, I don't know. It was just weird. It was just a weird, weird feel about that.
Well, for me, it was the slow motion replay that I actually realized what happened. Because
right.
I did not realize when he went under the rope, his head hits the bottom rope, and ricochets down and hits the mat. It wasn't until they showed the slow motion replay that I actually could see what happened. I mean, that's why I said it was that quick. And, you know, Joe, speaking as a promoter as well as you are, you know, we don't want to see something like that happen. And the fact that it's that quick, you know, that's why people need to realize it's not a big move. You don't have to do the dive off the top rope. It doesn't have to be the through the table move that's going to hurt you. Something as simple as sliding under the bottom rope. Something as simple as a baseball slide. Look what happened to Neville. Those are the things that could injure you. Kevin Nash blew a quad, and all he did was step in the corner to make a tag. He just stepped wrong and blew out a quad. Unfortunately,
Vince
now it's become a running joke about Kevin Nash, but still.
Vince McMahon. Making a beeline running into the ring. He ran in, he slid under the rope, and basically same thing like Kevin Nash. He tore his quad. And that whole thing, you remember that, thing came to a screeching halt. So, I mean, a lot of people think, you know, I mean, in pro wrestling, you know, it's not the most extreme moves that get you hurt. On paper, it should. But a simple little whoop-de-doo or a slide under a rope, that's all it takes sometimes. Or another one. I was at this to see it at Monday Night Raw when Jericho and Benoit won the tag team title when Triple H. All he did was he pushed off on his leg, and that's all it took. You remember that?
Yes.
I mean,
but yeah, I just want to emphasize to people, you know, one, kids, if you're listening to the show, don't do this stuff at home. It's the simple things that can get you hurt, but do not try this at home. And for reasons such as that, something that simple can end not just your career, but could end your life like that.
Well,
you don't
actually,
know, I mean, it could have been worse than what we saw, and we've seen simple things end careers, and we've unfortunately seen a complete accident also end, you know, young lives. So,
I mean, let's up the ante on this one, Mike. Don't just try this at home. Don't try this anywhere unless you are within the walls of a reputable wrestling school. Other than that, we've all done our share of stupid stuff. Lord knows I have. But now that with the much more awareness on things, just, you know, they always say don't try it anywhere. Unless if you're of age, you are at a reputable wrestling school, and then, you know, you've got people watching you. You are properly, and like I said, even if you properly learn the technique and how it's done, accidents still happen. But at least, you know, if you're home, at least if you're home by yourself, whatever, you know, don't do it because, you know, like I said, bad things can happen, and bad things could even be worse.
Now, well, we're going to continue on with the show today, Joe. I don't want to bring anybody down. We want to have a little bit of fun tonight. It is May the 4th, by the way.
Well, we're not
bringing
anybody down. We're not bringing anybody down. We're, I mean, showing some awareness, too. I mean, it's not, we have fun, but there's also this thing about, you know, we got to be responsible, too, because of what we do.
I hate being responsible sometimes, but, you know, funny story about that. Brian, I will bring you on in just a moment. Our human history book is live on the air, waiting to come on with some little tidbits of history here. But, Joe, you're going to kind of find this story just a little bit funny.
Okay.
Last week, any of you follow me on Facebook, you saw that Rocket Boy Brett, our hometown hero from Humboldt County, paid a visit to the Sonoma Street Head Start Preschool. And to see the kids' eyes light up when a real professional wrestler walked in the room was an amazing feeling. Those kids were so excited to see him. He came in with the tights, the boots, and he was ready to go. Read him a story. It was like Butterfly Boy and Caterpillar Girl or something like that, one of those like kids' stories. But we were sitting here talking to the kids, and we were showing them pictures of Brett from his match against Daniel Torch and Cassius Coons from Rumble in the Redwoods 3. And we were showing the pictures. And, of course, the teacher wants to emphasize, you know, do you get hurt doing this? And Brett and I both said, you can get hurt doing this. We don't want to hurt anyone in the ring. So we emphasize, please, kids, do not try this at home. Do not do this to your brother or your sister. Do not try this on your on the little baby. Do not try this on your classmates at school. Now, Joe, you can see where the humorness is going to be. Because less than 5 feet away from me is my son. And if anybody ever heard talk about my son knows how to do a curb stomp. We are working on the pop-up powerbomb. He actually does know how to fall correctly. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. But he does it with me. And I make sure that we're on a big giant bed or a trampoline or something like that. I do not do anything to hurt my child. Do not call Child Protective Services. But it was kind of funny to sit there having to tell these kids, do not do this at home. And my son is sitting right there. I do? I'm like, okay. Thank you, son. Just a little funny story I thought I'd share real quick.
Dang. That I ranked that with the big cheap driving. Oh, my God. That's pretty funny.
It's one of those things, Joe, you know. As professionals, we have to emphasize the safety. But, you know, we both have kids, and our kids have done this stupid shit, and we've done it with them. But we know how to do it right, and we don't do what they do on TV. It's a little bit different, and we're just playing around a little bit. But it's kind of funny to have me saying, don't try this at home. And there's my son going, I do it right here. And me. Thanks a lot, son.
Well, in your case, it was about the timing. You know, you saying that.
Yes, and with
you
me.
You saying that, and Owen was right there. I mean, that's what made it really funny. I mean, pretty good.
There you go. Timing is of the essence on that one.
Mr. Westcott, how you doing, sir?
Good. Yes. Lovely tribute to Ray the Cripple Stevens. Yes, you already gave the one history deal. Yes. Can't believe it's been that long. I think I remember hearing about it. And, of course, I was in college at that time in 96. So, yeah, and there was a professor who was a pro wrestling fan, and, yeah, we struck up a conversation about it, and, yeah, I can't believe it's been that long. We have some other anniversaries coming up. May the 6th, we've got, so this would be 84, so, yep, we're going over at least 30-some years, 32 years for the Parade of Champions. The one that people really know about, Kerry Von Erich, Ric Flair, the main event at in Irving, Texas, Texas Stadium. And then, of course, May the 7th, we've got the 27th anniversary of Nature Boy Ric Flair beating Ricky Steamboat for the NWA World Heavyweight title and getting attacked by Terry Funk, getting piledriven through the table, which set up a great storyline. So, yeah, one of the greatest matches of all time. So, but going back a little further, May the 2nd. So, 22 years ago, we're talking 1994 here. Jake the Snake Roberts beat Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony, won the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Heavyweight Championship in Harriman, Tennessee. And it was going to be a short one because Jake didn't stay very long. So, they did one of those Phantom title switches, as they're known. So Dirty White Boy got the belt back, and they just went on from there. So it was just a short stint for Jake at that time. But then we go to 29 years ago, and you heard Mr. Souza make reference to the Cow Palace. Well, the late Kurt Hennig beat the late Nick Bockwinkel, won the AWA World Heavyweight Championship May 2nd, 1987, at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And Kurt, at that time, Kurt Hennig was mulling when he was going to go to WWE. Well, we knew he would, but he just delayed it by about a year. So yeah, this title switch, yeah, it stuck. So, and of course, he would lose the belt to, well, on May 9th. That's another anniversary coming up. So we've got 28 years when finally Jerry the King Lawler beats Kurt Hennig for the AEW World Heavyweight title, Memphis, Tennessee, Lance Russell doing the play-by-play, packed house in Mid-South Coliseum, Jackie Fargan was special referee. So it was just, yeah, a huge culmination for almost like a 50-plus year quest for Lawler to finally win the World Heavyweight title. We go to May 2nd, 1994 also. Larry Zbysko beat Lord Steven Regal, won the WCW World Television Championship at Center Stage Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. So it was nice to see Zbysko getting a championship again and gets a, you know, real swell guy, real incredible worker in the ring at that time, Lord Steven Regal, of course, William Regal, WWE. We go to May 1st, and 13 years since the death of Miss Elizabeth, ex-wife of the late Macho Man Randy Savage, and just a really sad way on how her life ended, being involved with Total Package Lex Luger, so real sad story, but still, just pure class, and she didn't have to take up a lot of clothes to get people's attention. She was, had pure sex appeal just by being in those dresses and just being right next to Randy. Of course, they were actually married at that time when she made her debut in WWE, and Randy was very jealous, very possessive of her. That much is true. They divorced in 1992, so Elizabeth, she wouldn't get involved in dating. I think she might have gotten married again. And then eventually goes to WCW, gets hooked up with Luger, and rest is history, unfortunately. We go to April 30th, 39 years ago. Superstar Billy Graham beat Bruno Sammartino to win, at that time, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation World Heavyweight Championship, April 30th, 1977, Baltimore, Maryland. And Vince Sr. made it very clear to Billy Graham how long this title reign was going to go, and it was going to go to February 20th, 1978. Bob Backlund would win the championship, Madison Square Garden, New York. So, but Graham, just, you know, he was definitely the man that people, yeah, imitated, duplicated. I mean, you saw it in Scott Steiner, you saw it in Hulk Hogan, it just in the Body Ventura. But Superstar, yeah, in a way, yeah, he kind of was first as far as that. And Billy Graham could work. Billy Graham could go hold for hold. Still seeing images in my mind of a match. It was a Super Bowl of wrestling. It was in a college game, college football game at that time. It might have been the Orange Bowl, but in Miami. But it was raining heavily, and it was a 60-minute time limit match. They went the full distance, and Billy Graham went up against Harley Race. It was title versus title, NWA versus WWF, and Graham is bleeding from head to toe. So it was just incredible match. And you have to understand, title versus title matches in those days, very, very rare, unlike now. Now it's no big deal, but back then, with the territories, with the politics at that time, it was very, very rare thing. So, yeah, a lot going on for history.
You're not kidding. Back in the territory days, title versus title was extremely rare. And they would, and basically where the match took place, they would make a huge, huge deal about it. I wouldn't be surprised if in New York they may have made reference to, you know, Billy Graham, you know, heading down to try to wrestle the title from Race. Now, at that time, keep in mind, the World Wrestling Federation or the Worldwide Wrestling Federation was a member of the NWA,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a time period. But, yeah, you know, lots and lots of history, and the match where Penning won the title from Bockwinkel. The one downer about that is just the small crowd. It's like, man, that was
I mean,
they had Russ Francis. They played for the 49ers. He was on the card, and they were trying to hype up the feud with Snuka against Colonel DeBeers and what have you. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I read somewhere one of the matches on the undercard, Ray teamed up with the Midnight Rockers, Jannetty and Michaels, in the six-man tag that night. I've never seen the entire show, let alone all the results.
Yeah, I think I've heard that, too.
I just saw, go ahead.
Also want to mention real quick, our best wishes and our prayers go out to Bobby the Brain Heenan. Gene Okerlund had announced on his Twitter feed that Bobby Heenan took a bad fall, and he's in the hospital right now.
Yes, huge thoughts and prayers go to the Brain and his family. And, you know, we got to see him at Cauliflower Alley. Didn't go right up to him, but he was there, and May's presence felt, which, you know, that was really cool, watching Gene and Terry Funk and mm-hmm. a few of the other legends go up to wish him well. But real quick about Miss Elizabeth, Liz, she was a gem. I got to meet her about the same time in the 96 Super Brawl at the Cow Palace. We were staying at the Clarion, and, you know, we saw her and posed for some pictures with her, and Jessica did too, and when she was little. And, you know, such a charming woman. Very, very, very nice. And very, very sad, you know, like you said. You know, I mean, you know, when she passed and all that, just very, very sad.
Mm-hmm. Definitely one of a kind, will be missed for sure. She definitely was a trailblazer, paved the road for a whole lot of what we've got now.
Very true, very true.
I'd like to throw in a couple other things here. I'm right here, Joe. Brian, you mentioned the Parade of Champions, that the anniversary that is coming up. I just want to let everyone know, in case you didn't listen to us last week, right now, available on the Fight TV app, which you can download through Google Play or the Apple Store onto your smartphone or tablet or iPad. You can download Fight TV, and you can now order the NWA Parade of Champions for only $9.99. It is now available on demand on the Fight TV app. So go out as soon as this show is done. Go out, order $9.99, and watch the NWA Parade of Champions. Over 2 hours, all the major NWA title matches are defended. It was an amazing show. And we are very happy to be able to share this with you through Fight TV. Also, we mentioned this last week, Through the Shattered Glass by Jeannie Clark is now available on Amazon. It went on sale today. You can order that on Amazon.com, or you can email Jeannie herself at throughtheshatteredglass@hotmail.com and order a personally autographed copy of the book. I went ahead and ordered one through Amazon just because, you know, price-wise or whatever. It's a little pricey to get shipping from the UK, but you know what? It is would be cool to have personally autographed copy. If you are into that, it is through the shattered glass@hotmail.com, or you can order it on Amazon. Those are now available. So if you have a chance, kick back, watch the Parade of Champions. While you're watching the Parade of Champions, go to Amazon real quick, order the book, Kill Two Birds with One Stone. Or if you really want to multitask, listen to us right now, order Fight TV, order the book, and try to do all three things at one time. If anybody is successful, please email me and let me know.
I have a gut feeling they'll ignore us first.
Well, probably. I did order my copy of the book, and, well, I'm not going to order the Place Champions of Fight TV because I have access to be able to watch it for free. So, anyways. Well, there's got to be some perk to having to go out there for that, but no. I would like to see the – I have not ordered anything on Fight TV yet. I've only watched the free stuff, you know, on demand. Jeff Manning, you'd be happy to know I have binge-watched Paragon Pro Wrestling. I think I've watched 6 months' worth in the last, like, 2 weeks. So, but I have not ordered anything, so I might try ordering Parade of Champions, knowing full well I'm going to enjoy it, and see how the whole thing works with the 9-net, how you order it and all that. So I might use this as my test mode to see if what the quality's like, how the show is, and all it comes across on my tablet, and then decide if I want to go ahead and maybe get some Ring of Honor or some Evolve. So, you know, it has its purpose. But like I said, $9.99. Fight TV is a free app. It is endorsed equity partner, Jim Ross. He talks about it every week on the Ross Report podcast. So we had a chance talking about it at CAC. It's a great product. If you're a wrestling fan, I mean, just the free content alone on demand, Smoky Mountain's on there, NWA Throwback is on there, there's some Mid-South on there, Traditional Championship Wrestling is on there, Paragon Pro Wrestling, West Coast Wrestling Connection. Oh, God, the list just goes on and on. And it's all available on your smartphone or your tablet. You know, you can also, if you have a certain brand smart TVs, you can connect your TV to your tablet or your phone and broadcast it onto your 50-inch or 60-inch or however big your flat-screen TV is. So many ways to watch Fight TV. And if you're a wrestling fan, a huge amount of wrestling content, as well as boxing and MMA. It is the ultimate fight app for the MMA boxing wrestling fan. And no, I don't get paid to say all that. So
that's good stuff. All that, you know, you just punch in, you go to the App Store and you punch in that app and you have access to all that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's all on demand and free. And then also, like I said, Ring of Honor, Evolve, Shimmer, they all have live events, not just on demand, live pay-per-views. So you can watch something live as it happens on Fight TV. You know, it's kind of the new way of pay-per-view. So it's an entertaining app. I enjoy it. I watch it at work a lot. You know, I get bored, so I just set it up on my phone, push play, and just let it go in the background while I'm doing whatever I got to do. So,
well, let's face it, with all due respect or lack of respect or whatever you want to say it, or it depends on who you're talking to, the error of buying pay-per-views for $60, $70, or $80 is just about over, which is not a bad thing. I mean, it's just the technology, the way it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. You know, it is what it is. I remember, pay-per-view in its infancy was closed-circuit theater. You know, you would go to, for example, up here would be the Eureka Theater to watch WrestleMania or to watch an Ali fight. Or, you know, in the case of boxing, you would have to wait an extra week or two and watch it on ABC's Wild World of Sports with Howard Cosell doing the play-by-play call, that type of thing. Not that I'm showing off my age or anything, once again. But, you know, with, you know, today's technology, just to put it all in a nutshell, I mean, it might be a little bit of a different direction, but, you know, decades ago, calling around the world or a long-distance phone call would cost you $5 for the first minute and 95 cents for each additional plus tax. Now you have a cell phone or you're on Facebook, you can talk to your friends clear around the world virtually for nothing.
Which is an interesting concept now, because every once in a while I will do that. I'll get a message from someone who's in Japan, but I'll get it at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll be like, what the? Oh, that's right, time frame. Never mind, I apologize. So, technology is a great thing. Technology is also a bad thing, too. Time zones and all that can be a bitch. Pardon my language.
Well, it kind of depends on who you're talking to and what you're doing. So, I mean, I know what you mean. One case in point, many, many years ago, it was like 3:45, 4 in the morning. It was my day off from work, and I was on the couch, and the phone rings. And I was like, you know, one eye open and one eye shut. You know, you're kind of watching TV, and then the phone rings. I grab it and I go, if you know, you better be dying, or you better want mouth to mouth. If not, I'm gonna hang up the phone. Oh my God, Joe, I'm so sorry. It was my dear friend, Lord Jonathan Boyd. He was a member of the Royal Kangaroos. He was one of the sheep herders as well. He was in Australia. He, you know, we talked for several years on the phone. Really, really good friends. He was supposed to be my best man at my wedding. He missed it by a couple of days. He had to go to Memphis for a family emergency. But no, he called and he goes, oh, mate, I'm sorry. I realized what time it was, and, you know, I'll let you go back to sleep. And I go, no, I mean, I can call you back, or if you want to call. So we end up talking for like an hour, just, you know, the continuation of the previous conversation. That's how Jonathan Boyd was. Real, real, real good guy. Charming guy. Brutal in the ring, but sincere gentleman outside the ring.
All right, well, Joe, we're going to move on here. We're going to bring on our guest for tonight. He has been waiting for us, and I think the listeners are probably tired of hearing us right now. So we're going to bring on our guest for the evening and Brian's challenger for the trivia contest. You getting nervous, Brian?
I'm ready.
He's ready.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome to ISW Radio our guest for this evening. As I said, you can classify him as possibly a super fan, but his story, very inspirational, which led to the creation of the Franklin Lee Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And tonight, our guest is none other than the founder, Mr. Franklin Lee. Franklin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael, and I'm happy to be here.
So, Franklin, we talked to CAC a little bit. I know you and Brian Westcott, he's on the line as well as Joe Souza. You guys are friends. You talk about you are a fan. You've been a fan of professional wrestling all your life, correct?
Yep, since 1980.
Now, what attracted you to professional wrestling? What was it that got your attention?
Well, what brought pro wrestling to my attention was growing up in a military family. My dad served in the Air Force for a total of 24 years. We were stationed in Florida, and one of my dad's Air Force buddies had brought over to the house a bootlegged tape of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And on that tape, I got to see Harley Race, who would become my very first hero, defeat Giant Baba for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And from that point on, I just fell in love with it.
Now, did you have any interest in getting involved in the wrestling industry? Because, like I said, you do operate the Hall of Fame. Did you have any interest in being part of the wrestling industry, or were you just a fan?
A little bit of both. I've always been a fan since 1980, and I've always dreamed of either being a play-by-play man or a manager in the professional wrestling business, but for unforeseen circumstances, that particular dream never seemed to materialize, but that never destroyed or killed off my love or respect for professional wrestling. So,
and now I said I talked to you with CAC. How long have you been a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club?
Well, I've been a member now going on my second year, so. And I'm looking to upgrade to a lifetime membership, so.
All right, now, at this past reunion, I had the chance to talk with you, and we were over at Diana Hart's table, and you told us a story. You had a very major, like, life-altering event that happened that kind of led to the formation of the Franklin Lee Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. Now, for our listeners, can you take us back to that day and tell them exactly what happened?
I sure can, Michael. Basically, the formation and the origin of the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame began in January of 2010. Because, as you know, I worked as a nurse for a nursing facility here in Wichita Falls. But what happened was I was working for another facility at the time, and I had just got through the front door of this particular nursing facility when all of a sudden the whole left side of my body just went completely bleh, and The left side of my face was twitching 9 ways to Sunday, so I knew right then and there, this is a stroke. But despite my best efforts and the best efforts of the patients who live at the nursing facility to get me some help, not a single one of my coworkers bothered to call an ambulance. Not a single one of my coworkers bothered to give me a ride to the hospital to get me much-needed medical attention. I literally had to crawl from the front door of this particular nursing facility to my car, drive myself to the hospital, and was eventually admitted. And I knew right then and there it was a stroke, but I was not prepared for the 2 bombshells that the neurologist on duty had would lay on me that particular night when he said, "Oh, by the way, Mr. Lee, did you know this was at least your 3rd massive stroke?" And I'm like, "What? How could this be my 3rd? This is the first one that I'm aware of." But nothing would deter me for bombshell number 2 when the neurologist said, "Well, it's probably a good thing you had this stroke, because if you didn't, we would have never found that tumor on the front of your brain." And I was like, "What?" So they went in, they excised the tumor from the front of my brain, which after they removed it was the size of 2 golf balls side by side. Went through radiation and all the other treatments, and a couple weeks later, during one of my follow-ups, even though I was responding well to treatment and therapy, my team of doctors, essentially, for lack of a better term, decided to try to write me off, saying, "You need to seriously retire from nursing. You just don't have what it takes to do the job that's required of you in the nursing field anymore." And then just when I thought everything was essentially done for, out of nowhere came a special group of men and women who came to my aid and essentially told these doctors, "Piss on that. We're going to get this man his life back, and we'll bet you our rock bottom dollar that before the end of the year, he'll be back to work full time as a nurse again." And this group of men and women wasn't another team of doctors. It wasn't my coworkers. It wasn't even one of those nonprofit charity groups that help out veterans. No, they were professional wrestlers who knew about me, who heard of me, and who respected my love and passion for the business. And they took time out of their busy lives and their schedules to check up on me, get me the help that I needed, help get me rehab. And sure enough, in just a little over 5 months, I was back to work full-time as a nurse, which then posed a new challenge for me. How do I possibly say thank you to a group of fine men and women who didn't have to be there for me but were, and say thank you for everything that they've done for me? And it took about a year for me to come up with the idea, and then all of a sudden it hit me. The Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And so in 2011, I started the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Year-End Awards and Hall of Fame, and now here it is 2016, and we're now in our 5th year, and I couldn't be any happier.
Now, if you don't mind my asking, who were some of the wrestlers that came to help you?
Well, one in particular was a gentleman by the name of Double D. So that one I definitely remember. He's one of the major stars for Impact Zone Wrestling in Lawton, Oklahoma. And matter of fact, he, along with Erica Torres and even the Empire, when I had my massive seizure attack in June of 2015, they took time again to be there for me in my time of need, and be there for me for my recovery from the seizure attack. So,
now, your story is absolutely amazing. I mean, when you were talking to Diana about this, I was just floored by what you were saying. You said that none of your coworkers at that nursing facility, they weren't able to help you, or they just didn't help you?
They didn't even bother to lift a finger.
Was there any repercussion? Has there been anything done about this since then? Because that almost sounds to me like, you know, like a negligence issue.
Well, As far as I know they've been under investigation multiple times for multiple complaints, so. But as far as whatever came about that, I really wasn't really concerned about that at that particular point in time. My primary concern back then was just trying to get myself better. But hindsight being 2020, of course, you know, maybe I should press charges on that. But you live and you learn. But bottom line is I'm just thankful to be here. And more importantly, was glad to start up the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And then, of course, be able to attend my very first Cauliflower Alley reunion this past April. So.
Joe, do you have a question for our guest?
Wow. Where in the world do I start? First and foremost, you know, thank you so much for being on the show. And your story is just remarkable. You mentioned that you got turned on with a tape of watching Wrestling from Japan and seeing Baba against Harley Race. Who were some of the other stars at the time that you were exposed to and got turned on to besides the likes of Harley Race?
Well, I got turned on by Nick Bockwinkel, who always conducted himself with class and dignity. As a matter of fact, he was one of my role models also. Along with Harley, who I learned such things as discipline, work ethic, love, passion, and respect for the business. Bockwinkel taught me to carry myself with class and dignity, both in my professional life as well as my personal life. Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, I learned to always strive to be the best and never settle for mediocrity, and pretty much never go into any kind of situation half-cocked or underprepared. I also learned from Paul Ellering, the famous manager of the Road Warriors, the power and the value of a good quality education. So I've had a lot of individuals in the wrestling business who played a big part in helping me to become the individual that I am today.
That is remarkable, and that's a lot. That is a very impressive lineup of inspiration. Bockwinkel, Ellering, my goodness, just great, great stuff. Brian, do you have a question?
After hearing that wonderful story, it's like, wow. And I thought what I went through was sheer physical hell, at least so I thought. So, yeah, you and I just clicked right away. Because since I, too, work in the healthcare profession, but at least also now we know, yes, and you're exactly right. Yes, say what you will about pro wrestling, but push come to shove, they are there for you. And they were there for me, like last year, I'm calling Michael. It's like, oh, I'm not going to be able to make it to the show. We were doing one of our tribute shows that time. And I'm on my way to emergency room with chest pain, but fortunately, it wasn't heart attack, it was a stroke, it was something else, and I'm doing a lot better since. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. If you could just touch on that, how much I think the world could learn a lot from pro wrestling and how pro wrestlers have given back to their fans.
Yeah, absolutely, because some people have this misconception about professional wrestlers saying they're all self-centered and egotistical, and I think a big part of that has to do with the way the WWE comes off on a lot of people, but what they don't understand is that there is more to the life, the business, and the sport of professional wrestling than just the WWE. I mean, you got pro wrestlers out there in the world that actually do care about their fans because they realize that we're their money and that if it wasn't for the fans putting their butts in those seats every night or every weekend that they wouldn't have a job. So when I had my massive seizure attack back in June of 2015, I never thought in my wildest imagination that the wrestling community would come together for me again, but sure enough, they did. I had the Empire checking up on me either every day or every other day, making sure that I was okay. I had Double D, who this past 2015 got inducted into the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, checked up on me. Erica Torres, the same thing, and Boyd Bradford, the manager of the Ages, checking up on me. I mean, I've just had all sorts of people check up on me. So to those who want to dishonor pro wrestlers and saying that they're nothing more than a bunch of self-centered, self-absorbed miscreants, well, I got news for you, schmucks. That is absolutely untrue, and anybody that wants to poke fun or insult pro wrestling or pro wrestlers, I dare those people to come and say that kind of schmuck to my face, because I'll tell you flat out, you're a liar, and how dare anybody insult pro wrestling or pro wrestlers.
Definitely, I couldn't have said it any better. Go ahead, Michael.
When you first started the Hall of Fame, you said it was your first class was in 2011, right?
Yes.
How was it accepted by the wrestlers? Because, I mean, you know, like I said, you're a fan, and you're doing this out of your heart to show your love and respect for what they did for you. How has the Hall of Fame been accepted by the honorees that you choose?
As far as how it's been accepted, we're now in our fifth year of existence, and it's been pretty much an ongoing thing that has actually caught on with a lot of people on the independent scene. I mean, we pretty much made history in 2011 by having our very first inductee be a woman. Actually, her name is Lady Amazon. She used to be a wrestler and a manager over in the Tennessee area. So to have her as my first inductee was absolutely incredible. As a matter of fact, she even applauded the effort and got her plaque presented and all that other good stuff. So my very first class of 2011, we had three people get in, which was Lady Amazon. We had Coach Gary Toole, who is a tag team specialist down in Oklahoma. And then Craig Classic, who many know as the two-time NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion, who ended Mike Quackenbush's stranglehold on that championship. So to go from that class to where we are at right now is absolutely incredible.
So how do you choose the honorees each year? Is there like a criteria? You know, what is it you're looking for? What makes a honoree for the Franklin Lee Hall of Fame?
Well, as far as my criteria, I really only have two primary prerequisites that one has to meet, and I hope that we have a lot of the guys and the gals listening up, because I've often been asked, how can I get in on either the year-end awards or your Hall of Fame? And the answer is, as long as you meet these two mandatory prerequisites of mine, you'll eventually get in, which is one, you either have to be in or were in the wrestling business, because after all, it is a pro wrestling year-end awards and Hall of Fame after all. And then the second is, of course, you got to be on my friends list on Facebook, and it's not like I'm a hard man to find. All you got to do is look for the bald-headed guy who's next to Bruce Tharp, and you'll find me on Facebook. So, and then from there, I basically start reviewing videotapes of the possible candidates, start looking at their biographies and doing my research on them, and based on everything I turn up, I decide from year to year who will be getting inducted on that particular year. So, the bottom line is those two primary prerequisites have to be met first in order to get in. So,
now you're in Wichita Falls, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Have you been to the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame in the Big Blue yet?
Yes, I've actually been several times.
Have you talked with Johnny Mantell about what you're doing? I'm just kind of curious what his take on it is.
Yeah, he thought it was pretty cool that a fan would take that kind of initiative to actually do something like that on their own. And like I said, been doing it since 2011, and I really don't see myself stopping anytime soon until, heaven forbid, I get called up. So,
well, man, what you've gone through with the strokes and the tumors, I don't see your ticket getting called anytime soon, man. I mean, if you look up Survivor in the dictionary, you know, there's going to be a picture of you right next to it. I mean, your story is absolutely amazing, and I'm hoping our listeners, when they download this episode later tonight or on the Offshoots Network when it goes up tomorrow, they listen to your story. Maybe they're having a bad day or something's happened to them, and they're thinking, you know, I can't do this or I can't accomplish this. They're going to hear your story, and maybe that's going to be that little incentive that, you know, they can do this. You know, they can accomplish what they want to do. They can't – this is not a setback. Because, I mean, I don't know if you feel that way, but, man, you're an inspiration. I think your story should get out there, and that's why I wanted to have you on here as a guest.
Well, I definitely appreciate that, Michael, and thank you also for allowing me to help get the word out about the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
We can kind of thank Brian for that. He actually has brought up the list of honorees a couple times in the past couple months. It was actually Brian who got me, you know, sent your way and all that, and I learned more about the Franklin Lee Hall of Fame. Now, this year's class has already been announced, and this year you're actually inducting, I believe it's every member of the Empire.
Yeah, that is correct. For this year's class of 2016, the entire group of the Empire, which is Matt Riviera, Tim Storm, Greg Anthony, Steve Anthony, Tony Desermo, and Shane Desermo are all being inducted this year. And just as an exclusive for you guys and for you listeners out there who bother to pay attention to my posts on Facebook for IHWE Radio tonight, I am pleased to announce that I am also hard at work for the class of 2017. And for the first time ever since I started the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame back in 2011, I am pleased to announce that for the first time ever, I will be inducting the 2017 class at the 52nd reunion of the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Wow. Now, guys, I think that's an exclusive right there, guys.
Yeah, it is.
Definitely.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Franklin, for announcing that, and we will have this show up available for download this evening. It will also be available on the Offshoots Network starting tomorrow, so we will definitely make sure to get the word out about the Franklin Lee Hall of Fame. Now, being in Wichita Falls, have you been to an IHWE event before? Because we're based out of Fort Worth, Texas.
No, I haven't had a chance to get down to Fort Worth because of my work as a nurse for a nursing home, because there are times that I pull 10, 11, sometimes 14-hour work days, so it's kind of hard to get time off from work in order to attend an IHWE show. But as far as wanting to go to one, oh, absolutely. It's just being able to find the time to get down there.
Well, I'm going to let you know, man, like I said, you're an inspiration. I've loved this interview, and I'm looking forward to our trivia contest, which is about to come up. On behalf of ISWE, I would like to offer you, you know, as my guest, to be my guest. When you're able to come to the show, we have the Triple Crown happening May 29th of this year, Memorial Day weekend. Also in July, the end of July, Old School Hustle is going to be happening in Crowley, Texas, just right outside of Fort Worth. I would like to invite you to be my guest and come enjoy an IHWE show, and I will make sure that you have a chance to meet some of our IHWE stars.
Well, I definitely appreciate the invitation, and as soon as I can find the time, and as soon as I can find some time to get away from work and make sure that the event coincides with my work schedule, I'll definitely give you a buzz and take you up on that invite. And before we get on with the trivia contest, and Brian had mentioned this a few weeks ago on IHWE Radio, I do a pretty good impression of Precious Paul Ellering, and anybody that's a friend of mine on Facebook knows that I recently befriended Harry Smith, better known as Davey Boy Smith Jr. of the Killer Elite Squad, and he too is a diehard Paul Ellering fan. And so, if it's not too much trouble, I would like to do an impression of Precious Paul Ellering putting over the Killer Elite Squad.
Floor is yours, my friend.
All right, here we go. Salutations, sycophants! Paul Ellering here, and after my long sojourn across the globe, I have finally found me a tremendous kingdom worthy of my services. I'm talking about the Killer Elite Squad, Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Hoyt. Why these two men, you ask? Simple. 250 pounds of British Canadian Bulldog. 275 pounds of American Psycho. And a megalomaniacal maniac who has been there and done that in the wrestling business. And to all you other tag teams out there who are holding championship gold, consider yourselves put on notice. The KES is coming for you because they want what you have, and that is your gold. Why? Because just like the Road Warriors, the Killer Elite Squad takes care of business the only way they know how, and that's to beat people up.
Well, now we can add Precious Paul Ellering to the list of people that have been on IHW Radio. Oh, thank you very much, Franklin. That was amazing. That was a lot of fun.
You're very welcome.
All right, Brian, are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, Joe, you got some questions ready? I have a couple. I think we can pull this off. You ready to quiz these two?
Do fish swim?
No, if they're dead, they float, but yeah.
Stop.
All right, well, guys, I want to do something a little bit special for you here because, you know, this is May the 4th. It is Star Wars Day, and this is probably going to be a very epic trivia competition. So I wanted to give it a little fanfare before we get started because, ladies and gentlemen, actually, you know what, Joe? You do ring announcing. Let's let you introduce our two competitors for the trivia competition.
Okay. No rib off of you, Mike. I actually had to clear my throat a little. Okay.
I apologize.
Okay, no, you have to add the what do you mean I enjoy smoking too? Come on, Michael. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners and followers of IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio, I am pleased and proud to introduce tonight's competitors for the IHWE Pro Wrestling Radio Trivia Contest. Normally, I would have their weights down. I would have where they are from. But I don't. So,
Wichita Falls and Meridian, Idaho.
Okay.
Sorry.
At this point in time, gentlemen, please introduce yourselves. Not you, Michael.
Okay.
Franklin Lee, founder and chairman of the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame from Wichita Falls, Texas.
Brian Westcott, the human history book of IHWE Professional Wrestling Radio, CAC Lifetime Member, and 2012 Cauliflower Alley Club Red Bassie Friendship Award recipient.
We have a couple of heavy hitters tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And the winner, this is quoting from the Jim Rome show. Once a year, he has a contest called the Smack Off, where all the clones are invited to call in and run their smack. And in this case, the winner will be, for 1 year, King of Wrestling Trivia Smack. You'll be able to wear that proudly for the next 365 days. Being that said, gentlemen, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ready and willing.
Michael, give out the first question.
Hold on just a second, Joe. As I said, we got to have a little bit of fanfare. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now about to begin the first ever IHW Radio Professional Wrestling Trivia Challenge on Star Wars Day, May the 4th. Okay, like I said, a little fanfare. All right, guys, so the rules of this are very simple. This is what Joe and I have come up with. We are each going to ask you a few different questions. What we're going to do, the first person to get three questions correct will be the winner of this trivia competition. We'll just go off there. You know what? As the guests, we'll say guest first tonight, Brian. We'll give Franklin the first question. Franklin, if you get this right, we'll then move on to Brian. If you are wrong, we will not offer that question to Brian. The question will be taken out. You will not have a chance to each answer the same question. Each, you will be given your own question to answer. Does that sound fair?
That's fair to me.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay, Michael, real quick. Okay,
yes.
Since the question will not be passed to the opponent, we can give the answer. Yes?
Yes. Once the answer has been given by the person the question was asked to, then we can reveal the correct answer.
Okay, very good, very good. Just wanted to clarify.
Okay, Franklin, I am going to start off with you. First question. Which of these names was not suggested by WWE for Steve Austin? Fang McFrost, Otto Von Ruthless, Stone Cold?
I'm going to go with Stone Cold.
That is correct. WWE did not offer the name Stone Cold to Steve Austin. That was suggested by Jeannie Clark in reference to him drinking his tea before it gets Stone Cold.
Stone Cold, exactly.
Fang McFrost and Otto Von Ruthless, if you can believe it, were actual names suggested by WWE for his character when he wanted to change from the Ringmaster.
Yep, and to also add to that, another name that they recommended for Steve Austin was the Ice Dagger.
The Ice Dagger, that's right. There are no bonus points, though. Joe.
He wants to get some miles ahead of Mr. Westcott, I'll tell you what.
I'm sure.
Okay, Brian, are you ready, my friend?
Yes.
Okay. A little music video from 1979. In its days of infancy, MTV creator and video pioneer and former monkey Michael Nesmith, he had a song called Cruisin'. In the video, he had three characters, Lucy and Ramona and Sunset Sam. Sunset Sam was played by a professional wrestler. Who was that professional wrestler? Was it Tony Rocca, Chief J. Strongbow Jr., or Steve Strong?
I am going to guess Steve Strong.
Boom! There goes the dynamite. Mr. Westcott, you are on the board. Well done.
So, at the end of round one, we are 1-1. This is going to be an interesting competition. Joe, I'm going to let you offer Franklin his next question.
All righty. Franklin, are you ready, sir?
Yep. Let's go for it, Joe.
Okay. July 17th, 1968, the Cal Palace in San Francisco. In a rare Worldwide Wrestling Federation world title versus U.S. heavyweight title match, U.S. champion Ray Stevens defeats Worldwide Wrestling Federation world champion Bruno Sammartino for the title. Here's the question. How long was Ray's title reign? Was it 5 months, 3 weeks, or 6 days?
I'm going to go with 6 days.
Yes, indeed. You are right. You see, what happened was it was a 2-3-fall match. The ref took a bump. Bruno went to help the referee, and behind both their backs, Ray threw a low blow, which put Bruno out of the ring. Referee climbed in, counted Bruno out. Now, back then, at that time, in the Cow Palace, countouts were considered clean finishes. So Ray had the title, and 6 days later, there was an emergency meeting where Ray was stripped of the title, the world title, not the U.S. title, because, you know, he didn't lose the U.S. title. He was also fined $1,000, placed on 60-day probation, and if he were to have done anything comparable to what he did to Bruno during that time, he'd be suspended for 2 years. So the following month in the Cow Palace, Ray and Bruno matched up again, same title versus title, but this time it went all three falls, 1 hour draw.
My turn?
Yes, your turn.
All right, Brian, here's your next question. You made reference to this earlier. On May 6, 1984, Kerry Von Erich defeated Ric Flair to win the NWA World title. How many days did Kerry Von Erich hold the World Heavyweight Championship? Was it 21 days, 30 days, or 18?
18.
18 days is correct. He lost it back to Ric Flair in Japan 18 days after winning it from Flair at the first ever annual David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions. Joe, we're tied 2-2. And the way this is going, whoever has the next question, which should be Franklin, unless we can come up with a way to stump, you know, Mr. Lee, it's looking like Franklin's going to be the first man to three.
Well, let's see what happens here.
So I think we need to up our game here a little bit. We got to make this a little bit difficult. So since it is 2-2, Joe, I think you said you had a good question. So since it's tied, we will give the question first to Franklin. If Franklin is wrong, we will give Brian a chance to answer the question. This way it's fair. They both get a shot to see who can make it to three.
Okay. In the state of Oregon, in the Pacific Northwest Territory, Don Owen was the promoter. When Don Owen shut down his territory, his promotion, who was the final NWA Pacific Northwest heavyweight champion? Was it Steve Dahl, the grappler, or C.W. Bergstrom?
And, Franklin, the question is yours.
Okay. I'm going to go with the grappler.
Sorry, sir, incorrect.
Brian, here's your chance.
I am going with C.W. Bergstrom.
Brian, you are correct.
And there we go, ladies and gentlemen. The first man to three and the winner of the IHW Radio Trivia Challenge, the human history book of IHW Radio, Mr. Brian Westcott. Brian, Franklin, great competition. I think we had some decent questions on there, so I hope the listeners enjoyed this. But both of you, man, I did not know the answer to the final Pacific Northwest Heavyweight Champion. I'll tell you that right now. I had no clue.
Sometimes I do keep a little cat in the bag, sometimes.
Well, once again, Brian, congratulations. We're going to have to find a challenger. Maybe we're going to have to bring on somebody else to try to see if they can dethrone you.
Well, first and foremost, guys, this was a lot of fun, I mean, to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, first and foremost, you know, your interview was enlightening and inspiring. I mean, it was so it was really, really great to, you know, listen to you and get the chance to talk with you as well. And the trivia contest, you know, lots of fun, you know. Always fun to talk history and also do wrestling trivia.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine there, Joe. And, again, I definitely appreciate being on the show and being able to share my story and get the word about the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame out there. And, again, to all our listeners out there, who are wanting a reason to attend the 52nd reunion of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Like I said, be there for that 52nd reunion so you can see who will be getting inducted as the 2017 class of the Franklin Lee Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
All right, well, Franklin, thank you for joining us. And like I said, if just one listener gets some inspiration from your story and wants to go ahead and do something, whether it's wrestling related, whether it's just anything, if one person takes away from this show and feels an inspiration to try to achieve a goal or do something they've always wanted to, you know, accomplish, I think we've done our part. And man, I think you should be proud to be an inspiration for a lot of people. I'm very happy to say that, you know, you are a friend of mine. I will be in touch with you again. And like I said, as soon as you're available to come to an ISW event, just let me know. And you are there as my guest, and I will be proud to have you there. But thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Joe, and thank you, Brian.
Indeed, a pleasure was all my man.
Yeah, anytime.
You have a good night, Franklin.
Thank you, same to y'all.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Brian. King of wrestling trivia smack for a year. And Mike's getting all choked up.
I had to cough a little bit. Yeah.
Well,
and by the way, guys, we did have a listener. We did have a listener tonight. Morgan Dollar is listening back in North Kakalaki tonight. He got a good reception on a tin can antenna. But I want to let him know the contest was not fixed. Yeah, we didn't have a crooked referee. Well, according to him, he said Brian knew the answers before the question. So,
wow.
No crooked referees. Nobody greased my palm. Brian, don't forget to send me my check tomorrow. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Well, I guessed on the Steve Strong one, but I did know the final one because I've been keeping track of Pacific Northwest for years, and I remember it was May of 1992 when Owens announced his retirement. Is like, yeah, that's right. C.W. Bergstrom did close it out. As far as the last one under Owens.
It took place at Uncle Milt's Pizza.
That's right.
In Vancouver, Washington.
That's right.
And it was a TV match where Bergstrom beat Ron Harris, one of the Bruise Brothers.
That's right.
And when he won, he got the holy crap beat out of him, and Steve Dahl, and he never had a chance to defend the title. He was carried out. Steve Dahl came to the rescue and said, "Hey, you know, Bergie, I'm there for you, man, and I'll get revenge." And that's how the Northwest title from the Owens era ended. So,
yeah.
But no, on the music video, when you after the show, check it out. It's by Michael Nesmith. The song is called "Cruisin'." And it's pretty cool. And seeing Steve Strong in a little red spandex bikini walking down Hollywood Boulevard, Sunset and Vine, it's hilarious. You just have to check it out. It's funny.
Yeah, I'll have to.
Now, Brian, I will throw in one other thing here. Just out of curiosity, my wife suggested this as a question. I didn't actually get to this one. I had my questions already set out. But we'll throw it out there just to kind of test you a little bit. Do you actually know the name of the wrestler who is credited with inventing the pile driver?
Actually, well, at least with some of the wrestling names, no. I mean, and like we said, well, as Mike Leno has mentioned, we were talking about famous ring announcers. We know that one of the great ones, of course, is the name escapes me right now, but he was the one that came up with some of the names for some of those holds. I know at least with the power bomb. Well, actually, I think kind of Lou Fizz was kind of doing that first before it later became popular. And then, of course, I knew of other people who were doing the DDT before Jake Roberts and the Grappler. Well, Tiger Mask in New Japan.
Buddy Rose was doing it, too, up in Portland. He called it Hit the Jackpot.
Well, she found the question. She wanted me to throw this in there as a question for the show. But the man who was actually credited with inventing and popularizing the pile driver was known as Wild Bill Longson. He was a three-time National Wrestling Association heavyweight champion during the 1940s. Was also the last National Wrestling Association World Heavyweight Champion, losing the title to Lou Thesz on July 20th, 1948.
Yeah.
I read about him. Longson was he was a mean hombre back in the day.
Yeah, that's right.
But I thought
I would
throw that
unification. Yeah, they were doing unification stuff at that time, which gave more credibility to Lou Thesz as being the undisputed World Heavyweight Champion, as I recall.
You know, and then during that time period, you know, even up to maybe the late 70s, there were some quote-unquote territories that banned the pile driver, you know, if you got caught using it.
And Memphis famous for that.
Yeah.
It's still banned in Mexico. It's still used as a death move to this day.
That is true. That is very true.
Yeah, she asked me to throw them on her. I did not know it was Wild Bill. Honestly, out of Joe's questions, I knew Steve Strong, but that's only because I heard him say it before. Did not know. I thought it was the Grappler. I honestly thought, oh, Franklin won. And when Joe said, you're incorrect, I was like, oh, shit. This is why I was only hosting it. I was only asking my few questions. And, you know, and then, of course, Franklin has to one-up me by letting me know that, you know, also, Ice Dagger was another name that was used for suggested by WWE for Stone Cold Steve Austin. And by the way, thank God they didn't use any of those names, because if you read the book or heard his interview, the list of names that they came up with, he wanted to do like a cold-blooded serial killer type character, because he had watched a documentary or something on HBO. And WWE comes up with Fang McFrost, Otto Von Ruthless, Ice Dagger, something like Chester McFreeze. They came up with these stupid-ass temperature names, and it was just his wife telling him to worry about it before and drink his tea before it gets stone cold. That's how the name came about. Thank God Jeannie Clark is British and actually used the term stone cold for his tea, or else we might have had, you know, Fang McFrost 316. I don't know. Honestly, I don't think the character would have picked up as well.
well, think about it, okay? Normally, iconic things happen by accident, on the fly, if you will. I mean, case in point, don't let your tea get stone cold. And then the infamous promo after King of the Ring. That was off the cuff. That was not scripted. Hayes had not a clue what Austin was going to say. Austin came up and he just went into his spiel about the Bible thumping and right, you know, the light bulb kicked on, Austin 316, and the rest is history.
There you go.
Nobody saw that. Saw that one.
I did have one other question I was going to throw in there, and that's just because I thought this was funny. Joe would know the answer to it because he knows this is another one of my things. But I was going to ask, which one of these names was used by Mick Foley? And your choices were Boo Radley, Xanta Claus, or Swampy?
Well, probably the second one, because
Joe, do you know the answer?
He's really
actually, I don't.
Boss. Boo Bradley was used by the late Balls Mahoney. That was his first gimmick.
Yes, Boo Bradley was the Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Jim Cornette talked about that on his podcast last week. He talked about when they killed Boots the Cat and how basically the entire arena turned when they killed Boots the Cat. No, actually, Brian, Joe, I stumped the human history book. Santa Claus was another gimmick by Boo Radley, by Balls Mahoney.
Right.
He was the evil Santa Claus. Okay. Swampy was when Cactus Jack was suffering from amnesia at the hands of Big Van Vader in WCW and was living in the streets as a sea captain named Swampy. And they took his wife down into the streets to try to bring back his memory because he was really, he was Cactus Jack, but according to him, he was Swampy.
Yeah, if the if we were still going with the contest right now, I wouldn't have even done a multiple choice. I would have just threw this one out there. You know, World Wrestling Federation decided to combine the North American title and the South American title in beautiful Rio de Janeiro. What was the date of the tournament?
Do you know the date of the tournament, Brian?
Well, you have well, actually, they're both fictional tournaments, as we know the truth, because for WWF World Heavyweight Title, of course, 1963. But for what became known as the Intercontinental Championship, well, it would have been 1979, because that's when it first came about.
Okay, now, Brian, when was the North and South American title in Rio de Janeiro? What was the date that they crowned the Intercontinental Champion?
But I'd probably be get stumped on that one.
What?
April 1st.
Holy.
Oh.
Holy crap.
It was April 1st because it's always meant to be. It was an April Fool's joke. It never actually happened. Yeah. It was April 1st.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow, Joe, I feel pretty good. We stumped the history book. I'm impressed.
Yeah, but I'm not. Yeah, but you, if you want to go ahead and go Barry Horowitz and start patting yourself on the back, Jack, you go right
ahead.
Oh,
hell
no. Yeah, I was going to say, because Brian
no.
For you if those shenanigans keep up.
Nope. When I need my information, I know exactly what to do. I call Brian. All right, guys. Well, you know what? I think we can actually kind of wrap up tonight's show. We had a great interview. Trivia Challenge was entertaining. I would love to have Franklin Lee back on as a guest, maybe before he inducts the Empire. So maybe we can have some members of the Empire to come on, and we can do like a little Hall of Fame special or something like that. I mean, we've had Greg Anthony on here a few times before, so I'll talk with Franklin, and we'll see if we can work that out. But for tonight's edition, I think we're going to wrap this up. Once again, we'd like to thank our guest, Franklin Lee, for joining us tonight. He is the founder of the Franklin Lee Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. You can just search for him on Facebook. Just look up Franklin Lee. You can add him as a friend. Like I said, very inspirational story. If one person takes something away from this interview and is inspired by his story, then you know what? I think we've done our job here tonight. So, because we want to entertain, but we also want to enlighten, and we want to share the inspirational stories, not just bring on the wrestler talking about his next show or his next match. So we try to bring up something a little bit different. But until then, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/encyclopediaworldclass, or you can find me on Twitter at MichaelMC1972 or on Instagram at McCurdy1972. Send me a friend request, send me a question. If you have a question for one of our guests that you would like to have me ask them at a later date, I would be more than happy to do that if you felt there was something we just did not cover during our interview that evening. Joe, where can they find you on social media?
Well, obviously they're not going to find me in the at Camp Sousa behind the Railroad Curtain because that just won't happen. But the next best thing is y'all can find me at Facebook. Just look for me, Joe Sousa. That's J-O-E-S-O-U-S-A. There's a couple of awesome pictures. There's a picture of me surrounded by my beautiful kids, Mike, Jessica, and Patty. And the other picture is me greeting fans at last year's Rumble in the Redwoods, too. Just send me a friend request. If you want to chat wrestling, you want to chant monkeys, you want to chant, life in general, what have you, feel free. But, if I don't know you, send me a message, kind of give me a heads up, how you found out about me and that type of thing, and whether or not if the picture from the post office has been taken down yet. But we'll talk about that later. Brian, where can they find you?
You can find yours truly, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Westcott, W-E-S-T-C-O-T-T, .33 on Facebook, and my pro wrestling website, www.BrianRich, one word, B-R-I-A-N-R-I-C-H .net/Russell.html.
And you can find all of us right here on Facebook, facebook.com/ISW Radio, or on Twitter at ISW Radio. Also, real quick shout out here before we leave. This Saturday, May 7th, NWA Mid-South Wrestling presents Wrestling at Resorts 2. Special appearance, WWE Hall of Famer Kevin Nash, main event of tonight, this weekend's main event. NWA World Title match, Jack Dane defending his title against Tim Storm. NWA National Heavyweight title, Greg Anthony versus Ace Steel. The World Tag Team title match, The Iron Empire versus Michael Berry and Jeremy Moore. Feature bout, APOC versus the IHWE West Coast champion and DFW champion, Americos. Grudge match, John Saxon versus Purple Haze. Mustang Mike versus Roosevelt. And a special appearance by NWA Western States Heritage champion, Ricky Ruffin. So if you happen to be anywhere near the Resorts Casino this Saturday, May 7th, bell time is at 8 p.m. If you aren't able to do that, then please download the Fight TV app. You can download that on Google Play or on the Apple Store and order the Parade of Champions on demand, only $9.99. 8 matches, 2.5 hours of amazing in-ring action. You will not be disappointed. Or you can also go to Amazon, as I said, Amazon.com, and order Jeannie Clark's book, Through the Shattered Glass. I have ordered my copy. As soon as it arrives, I'm sure we will talk a little bit more about that. Until then, please join us next week right here on IXWE Professional Wrestling Radio. Thank you for listening tonight, and have a wonderful evening.
Good night, everybody.
So long, everyone.